Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's a Saturday night on Center Street in Casper, Wyoming. The year is 1954. You're alone on a stroll after a long but relaxing day, enjoying the oncoming dry cool of the early summer evening. The sign on one of the bigger hotels that blares "The Petroleum Club" is impossible to miss. And you've already seen Chick and his band play a few times. Many others have too. Chick Erickson and his hit music makers are a mainstay on the Casper weekend scene. They have a residency at the hotel, and on a beautiful night like this, you know the joint's going to be packed, even before you can hear the swing emanating into the dusk from a block away. The 8-piece is known for its up-tempo swing music. That and a cold beer or two would hit the right spot about now. And so you make your way to the Town's End Hotel, where the in-house dining experience is notorious. Originally built as a Western supper club on the end of town, the Petroleum Club found its place as a dimly lit but classy hotel bar. For decades, the who's who of Wyoming money in Casper found the Petroleum Club as a usual haunt. In 1954, there isn't yet a hint of the oil crisis of the 1980s. And the politicians and their mistresses and the oil tycoons with their wives are out tonight. A few you recognize, some you don't, but their emanating sense of importance is impossible to miss. Right now, there are millions of dollars worth of deals and power in this otherwise unassuming room. It's still early enough to find a lone seat at the bar, and so you belly up into a brown leather chair. Chick and his boys are in fine form as usual, expertly performing a Glenn Miller standard. The back of the bar is nothing but wall-to-wall local history. Plaques and photos, some signed by people and names you recognize, and crammed one next to another behind the barkeep. An elderly man, probably 70s, and thick glasses, dressed in a starch white shirt and a narrow black tie. He's the only person in the place not smiling, you realize. By the time your drink arrives, you've already been prodded more than once by the man sitting to your left. He's short, pudgy, and also wearing a shirt and tie, but you know it's been loosened around his neck for several hours now. Or several years. "Name's Jim," he says. You introduce yourself in kind, and you can see he's had quite a head start on his drink. Two of his empty glasses are still on the bar. Jim, you soon discover, is nothing but smiles and stories. A sip or two into your own, you know more than you thought you ever would about the world of Jim Alexander. Despite his average presence, he's one of those who makes a lasting impression. And you'll recall just about every word of this conversation when James Alexander's name is front page news all over the state just a few years later. He's just told you he's the shop instructor at the local high school, which sticks out as much as anything he's said, because while he looks the type, he doesn't fit it, not in this place, anyway. It's not clear how many patrons of the bar right now know Jim Alexander, but he seems to know every one of them, or at least gives off the impression that he does. The Glenn Miller song wraps up on stage. There's Chick, back to the microphone, dedicating this next one to, of all people, your new bar friend. "We know you love this one, Jimmy," Chick says with a toast of his own glass. "This one's for you." Chick Erickson and his hit music makers break into a spot-on earnest tub.
I'm walking the floor, oh,
look back at Jim Alexander. Now he's wearing the biggest smile you've ever seen in your life. His jovial movements to the song might just break that bar stool. This selection of the band you'll remember in years to come, too, along with the song's lyrics, "I'm Walking the Floor Over You," which will take on a macabre meaning when they finally dig up Jim Alexander's basement. Welcome back to Dead and Gone in Wyoming, a monthly podcast telling the stories of this remarkable state's most enduring murders and disappearances. I'm Scott Fuller, and coming up on this month's episode, the most creative of love triangles ends in murder. But who had the motive to kill, and precisely who did the deadly deed? Barbara Alexander was young and beautiful, especially in comparison to her husband, who was balding, plump, and 19 years her senior. They'd been married following Jim Alexander's divorce from his first wife, Rose, who he'd met back east in Connecticut, where Jim was a volunteer fireman in a past life. In 1945, the couple moved to Casper for a fresh start, but the clock on their marriage was ticking, and within a few years, Jim and Rose were irreconcilable. Due likely in no small part to the emergence of a young and pretty Barbara, who hailed from Montana, Jim and Rose divorced in 1950. Jim was then in his early 40s, and then was free to roam. He might not have been considered a catch for most typical 20-something women of the West at the time, but it can't be denied that James Alexander possessed some sort of charisma that women of a certain breed were attracted to. Jim was never wanting for female attention, including, it would seem, from his ex-wife. Their marriage hadn't survived, but it was clear that Rose still bore feelings for Jim following their split. Rather than move back home to Connecticut following her divorce, Rose stayed in Casper. There's no way to know for certain, but it seems clear that liaisons continued between the ex-spouses for some time, even while Jim, who'd taken a job as the high school's shop teacher by now, was exploring other romantic options. One of those options was Barbara, and a few years after Jim's divorce, he married her. Not necessarily the most unusual of Wyoming love stories, at least, not yet. Hindsight being 20/20, things undoubtedly went south for everyone when Rose, Jim's ex-wife, moved in with a newlywed couple about a year after they'd been married. That's right, under one Casper roof was Jim Alexander, along with his former and current wives. What could possibly go wrong? Quite a lot, as it would turn out. James Alexander's logic in this dysfunctional and strange Temptation Island scenario he'd created for himself and the two women he'd ostensibly loved the most in his life isn't clear. We could make assumptions about Jim's personality here that might boil down to basically, two wives are better than one, which, incidentally, is debatable at least, but we can't and we shouldn't say for sure. Maybe Jim's motives were pure, if not naive. After all, Rose spent most of her time in an outbuilding on the Bessemer Bend property in Casper, newlyweds requiring their privacy and all that. But it must have been clear enough to Jim that Rose had not coped with the disillusion of her marriage well, or even close to well. Through this bizarre living situation, Jim, Barbara, and Rose did spend a fair amount of time with each other, or at least in one another's presence, the three of them. On off-spouse times, when Jim wasn't working, he could most often be found at the town's various saloons and weekend haunts, like the Petroleum Club. The former fireman surely had to put out flames of a different variety between the two women in his life, as Rose clearly resented not just Jim's preference for Barbara, but also that she had been shunned to an outbuilding on the property she had once made her own. Add to this facts that Jim and Rose had two children together, leftover artifacts of their failed nuptial experiments, who also lived in the house. Three other children, Rose's by a different father, were also increasingly in the picture. Jim and Rose had been in the process of formally adopting those children in the early months of 1953. The resolution to this issue eventuated in the summer. James Alexander's story, when questioned by police, would be that on the day of July 18th, and for some time before and after, he was back home in Connecticut, reconnecting with old family friends. And at least one of Jim's relatives back east would back him up on this. This left a slighted Rose alone on the property with the younger Barbara. Rose's version of the events of July 18, 1953 goes like this. Rose made her way to Jim's house on the property. Jim wasn't home, and at some point, for some reason, Rose and Barbara made their way to the basement, which was under construction. A large hole was excavated in the floor as Jim was remodeling the basement, and to allow access to all areas of the room in the meantime, a narrow wooden catwalk had been placed over the hole. Rose said that Barbara was attempting to cross this wooden plank when she fell a distance of 2 or 3 feet into the hole. Rose, ever the concerned sister wife, kind of course rushed over to see what had happened, to see that Barbara was motionless at the bottom of the hole. She told police she had seen a lot of blood, which made her uneasy, and so Rose fled. She left the house, left her ex-husband's current wife lying, apparently unconscious, or dead, in the hole. The following night, July 19th, according to Rose, Jim had returned home from his trip and asked that Rose take care of the couple's two children for an extended period of time because his young wife had, quote, left on business. The day after that, July 20th, Rose told police that she returned to the basement to find Barbara still lying at the bottom of the hole, now very apparently deceased. Rose admitted to authorities that she covered her body with about 6 inches of dirt. She then claimed that sometime later, Jim Alexander unknowingly poured concrete over the body. This apparently is Rose's idea of an exonerating statement to police. This much is known to be certain. The very day after Barbara disappeared, Rose Alexander moved back into the main house with her husband, her ex-husband. One way or another, for 9 months, 27-year-old Barbara Alexander's body lay under the floor of her own basement. Her disappearance would not be reported to police until the following March. And it likely never would have been reported at all were it not for Barbara's parents, who still lived in the tiny southern Montana town where Barbara had been raised. They weren't sure how, but they knew Rose or Jim, and probably both, had something to do with the reason that they hadn't heard from their normally very communicative daughter for over half a year. Unknown to Jim Alexander, he was placed under surveillance by local police. They watched his comings and goings, and those of his ex-wife Rose, who was present in the main house constantly, it seemed to police. Noticeably absent during the duration of the police surveillance, though, was his current and supposedly still living wife, Barbara. After having Jim under surveillance for some time, police began questioning the threesome's neighbors. One especially helpful older gentleman assisted the investigation by informing police that he was sure something nefarious had happened to the younger wife because his dog, which had a nose for such things, according to its owner, seemed especially interested in sniffing around a woodpile on the property. Other neighbors, though, came to Rose's defense. One woman was adamant she had known Rose Alexander and she could never do such a thing. That's when something else became clear to police, too. None of Jim, Rose, and Barbara's neighbors seemed to know that Rose had been living on the property after the summer of 1953, when Barbara had been last seen. The arrangement of Jim's ex-wife living there seems to have been successfully kept a secret from the neighbors, which is probably why Rose believed that police didn't know about it either. You see, Rose was supposed to have been living on her own, some distance away from her ex-husband's house. Not within walking distance, and certainly not on the very grounds where Barbara lived with Jim. And so Rose, who didn't own a car, had to explain how she'd arrived at Jim's house on that day in July to ask for money in the first place. Speaking of holes, Rose was about to dig hers a little deeper. She told police she had hitchhiked both to and from the Alexander home on that July afternoon. And that lie may have worked. After all, police had no way of verifying where Rose was actually living before Barbara's disappearance. Except for the fact that everyone who knew Rose Alexander, to a person, even her defenders, told police Rose wouldn't be caught dead hitchhiking anywhere. One neighbor literally told police that Rose would, quote, rather sit down and die than hitchhike. The same neighbor told police that Rose was a voracious reader, and especially, they said, of detective magazines. The Alexanders' neighbors were a wealth of information for police. Word on the street was Jim Alexander was a demanding and controlling patriarch. According to the neighbors, prior to their divorce, Rose once went 9 months without going into town because Jim wouldn't give her a ride. When he did drive Rose to town to vote in 1952 in the presidential election, Rose was very concerned that she would vote for the wrong people, by which she meant vote for the candidates that Jim wouldn't like. In the summer of 1954, about a year after Barbara's disappearance, and a few months after she'd finally been reported missing, Rose brought one of her neighbors a large box full of women's clothes. Rose told the neighbors she should take them because their eldest daughter refused to wear them anymore. And this stood out in the memory of the neighbor when questioned by police because they said the Alexanders seemed to be nearly broke. Why, then, would they be giving so many clothes away? Throughout their investigation in 1955, Casper police had been imploring Jim to allow them to search his basement. "We can settle this whole thing right now," detectives said. "Just let us do a search of the house. If we find nothing, you're in the clear." And so finally, on December 7th, for some reason, Jim Alexander gave in to the detectives' requests and allowed them to search his property. Jim probably hadn't been counting on the dogs that the police brought with them. Once in the basement, one dog immediately showed interest in one particular corner of the room. But police instead focused on a small corner of the floor across the room where the flooring didn't match. It must have been quite the scene. There stood detectives from the Casper Police Department, Jim, Rose, a news photographer, and a local construction man who'd been hired to jackhammer the floor, all of them crammed into the tiny basement, at least one of them knowing for certain what was about to be found. The contractor jackhammered away at the discolored area for several minutes, during which time, according to the news photographer, Rose Alexander looked as though she might faint. Finally, the jackhammer found bottom, and an area of debris was eagerly cleared by detectives to finally reveal nothing. There was nothing whatsoever in the hole. Rose Alexander couldn't hide from her face the shock that came across her then, and it was noted by every person in the room. But there simply wasn't a body in the place where she knew there to be one. She gasped in astonishment and even let out a small nervous chuckle. And then Jim, ever so slightly, nodded his head toward the east, toward the area of the basement that the dogs had been interested in as well. That's where what remained of 27-year-old Barbara Alexander from a tiny town in Montana and fatefully destined to cross paths with an older man, James Alexander, was finally unearthed. All that was left were bones and a crude wooden cross that the bones clutched across their ghostly chest. Rose was soon after arrested and charged with her ex-husband's wife's murder. At the ensuing coroner's inquest is when Rose told the story of Barbara's accidental death and her ensuing decision to cover up the accident without explanation for why she did so. Jim, of course, was clueless. He'd always assumed that Barbara had run off and left the family behind. She threatened to do so in the past, he'd said. As for the body in the basement, Jim also pled ignorance, telling police all he did was pour concrete. He had no idea that he was interring his wife's body in the process. He also had no idea that his rock-solid alibi that he'd been out of state for the several weeks surrounding the deadly events was crumbling as quickly as the concrete in his basement. Despite one family member placing Jim in Connecticut during the mid-July of 1953, at the time of his wife's murder, several other friends and family members, including Jim's own mother, told Casper police that they hadn't seen Jim Alexander in several years. These were the specific people that Jim told police he had seen in Connecticut during his vacation. Somehow, it didn't seem to have occurred to Jim that police would actually call those people to verify his alibi. Police took the opportunity of Jim Alexander's arrival at the police station to bond Rose out of jail to arrest him as well. And inside of a month of the morbid discovery in their basement, Jim Alexander had also found himself inside of a jail cell, not far from his ex-wife. Actually, technically, his wife. Because for an otherwise notable 1950s homicide investigation dealing with a missing person, Casper PD did miss one thing. Detectives to that point did not know that in the months following Barbara's disappearance, Jim and Rose had taken a short trip to Colorado, where they had been remarried. It's been speculated this was done in part to prevent the couple from being forced to testify against one another at trial. An autopsy conducted by the county coroner concluded a probable cause of Barbara's death, but stopped short of calling the findings definite. Casper's police chief confirmed that the victim had suffered a skull fracture. To say that the murder of one wife at the hands of a former scandalized 1950s sensibilities in Casper, Wyoming would be a vast understatement. And once Barbara's remains were finally revealed, the love triangle, gone extraordinarily wrong, was all anyone in town could talk about, and all the press seemed interested in writing about. With all the notoriety, the trial was moved to Cheyenne, where it commenced, I kid you not, on Valentine's Day, 1955. At trial, slowly and methodically, the state built its circumstantial case in front of a jury of 7 men and 5 women. Testimony revealed that in June of 1953, prior to Barbara's disappearance, Jim had raised the water meter in his basement so it could be read outside the basement window. He also had Barbara sign blank conveyancing deeds. Jim told people different stories about Barbara's disappearance. Barbara was dead. She was lying in dry cement and lime. She had left him. She had threatened suicide. He'd seen her on the street. He dreamed she had come to him. Jim Alexander had said in a letter, "Never do I feel as near my beloved Barbara as when I sleep in the basement." When a friend told him once that police thought he had put Barbara in a fire pit that he'd been digging, Jim Alexander replied, "I don't have her in the fire pit. I have her in the basement." Jim made even more remarkable, implicating statements regarding his wife's absence. He boasted of his ability to kill a person with a single blow. And he bragged about the most perfect crime being committed where the perpetrator was supposed to have buried his wife in concrete. Likely the only reason we have resolution of this case at all is the persistence of Barbara's parents back in Montana and their certainty that something terrible had happened to their daughter. It came out in the trial that Jim Alexander had written Barbara's parents in September of 1953, 2 months after her murder, that Barbara had taken a vacation from home and marriage, as he put it. Thereafter, he wrote postcards signed The Alexanders. And later, he went to Barbara's parents' home in Montana. Not finding her parents there, he left a note behind saying, quote, "We have been here but couldn't wait. Sorry. The Alexanders." Thus, leaving it open to inference that Barbara had been there with him. Jim Alexander was found guilty of second-degree murder and was sentenced to no less than 45 years, no more than 65, in the state penitentiary. In sentencing, Judge Sam M. Thompson harangued and lectured Jim Alexander for nearly a half hour comparing Rose to a brainwashed prisoner of war. The judge's observation was later borne out by a psychiatric evaluation of Rose, which resulted in the prosecutor dropping charges against her. The woman, who herself claimed to have been present for the death of Barbara Alexander and had admitted to taking part in literally covering up the crime, was eventually let free. As for Jim Alexander, all of his subsequent legal appeals were denied. The legal action that followed lasted for years, actually became fairly notable in the annals of Wyoming law. Jim Alexander was denied parole in 1965, in 1966, in 1967, and so on. Interestingly enough, it's in prison where Jim Alexander himself seems to disappear. Following the conclusion of his legal appeals, there doesn't seem to be any record of him beyond 1967 or so. And so we're left without any final conclusion of this story, then, of what ultimately became of the man we met back at the bar. And there will always be at least a few unanswered questions about the wife, and indeed the wives, of James V. Alexander. Thank you for listening to this month's episode of Dead and Gone in Wyoming. Sources for this episode include Wyoming Tales and Trails at wyomingtalesandtrails.com, the Casper Star Tribune, and the Hartford Connecticut Current. I'd also like to take a moment to thank Patreon supporters that we gained in May. Those would be Robin, Deborah, Jessica, and Eleanor. Thanks to all of you. Patreon supporters of this show now receive exclusive content, including Patreon-only episodes, and we're going to be hosting the first of our monthly behind-the-scenes episode in the coming days, something I'm calling Campfire Conversations, against my better judgment. But these will offer a chance for Q&A, case discussion, a peek behind the scenes of the show, inside and outside of the episode, just some additional monthly bonus content for our Patreon supporters. And I'll put a link in the show notes for our Patreon. If any of you are able or willing to join and become a supporter of that community, please do. It helps keep the show alive. And thanks to all of you just for listening to Dead and Gone in Wyoming. But sadly, that's all the time we have for this month. And so for everyone at county10.com, I'm Scott Fuller, already looking forward to bringing you the next episode of Dead and Gone in Wyoming.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.